Chapter 40. Amos. Between walking and biking, scrounging up food and picking a route that avoided the dense populations around the Washington Administrative Zone, the 700-odd kilometers between Bethlehem and Baltimore had taken them almost 2 weeks. The 400-odd clicks from the Arcology to Lake Winnipesaukee took a couple hours. Eric sent out Butch, whose name was something else that Amos couldn't remember even after they told him, and two others, then sent him and Peaches to wait in another room while he had some conversations. 20 minutes later, Amos and Peaches and Eric and 10 men and women were standing on the roof of the Arcology, loading into a pair of transport helicopters with the Al Albiq security logo on the side. Eric didn't say if they were stolen or if he'd been paying off the security force, and Amos didn't ask. Pretty much an academic issue at that point. The landscape they passed over was bleak. The ashfall had slowed, but not stopped. The sun was a ruddy smear on the western horizon. Below them, cities bled into each other without so much as a tree or a swath of grass between them. Most of the windows were empty. The streets and highways were filled with cars, but few of them were moving. They swung out to the east as they passed by New York City. The great seawall had been shattered and the streets flooded like canals. Several of the great towers had fallen, leaving holes in the skyline. "Where is everyone?" Peaches shouted over the chop of the rotors. "They're there," Eric shouted back, gesturing with his bad arm and holding onto the strap with his good. "They're all there. It's just there's not as many as there were last week, and more than there are going to be." Over Boston, someone fired a missile toward them from the roof of a commercial shopping district, and the copters shot it down. The sky to the east was the low, bruised dark that made Amos think of storm clouds. In the west, the sunset was the color of blood. "We're gonna have trouble with the rotors icing up?" Amos asked the pilot, but he didn't get an answer. They sat down at an airfield, a few clicks south of the lake, but Amos got a look before they landed. Low hills holding the water like it was being cupped in a massive palm. There were maybe a dozen islands scattered across the lake, some as crowded with buildings as the shore, others with little tame forests if someone rich enough for the luxury lived there. The landing platform was a square of floating ceramic, with red and amber lights still blinking for visual landings. When they actually got to the water's edge, it wasn't as pretty. The water stank of dead fish, and a coating of ash lay across the surface like someone had sifted chalk dust over the whole place. Eric's people waded in up to their thighs and dropped 3 packages that unfolded into hard, black pontoon boats. By the time they started toward the enclave on Rattlesnake Island, the sky was a perfect black. No stars, no moon, no backsplash of light pollution. The night was like sticking his head in a sack. They spun to the north side of the island, where a wide bridge on a coated steel pier ran out toward the launching pad. Hangars and boathouses encrusted the shore, boxes for the toys of the wealthy as big as basic housing blocks for 1,000 people. The pontoon boat they were in surged forward over the chop of the water. The boathouse they chose was painted bright blue, but outside the circles of their lights, it could have been anything. It only took a minute to find the keypad on a pole that poked up from the dark water. Peaches leaned over, stretched her thin arm, and tapped out a series of numbers. For a second, it looked like it hadn't worked. Then the boathouse doors silently rose, and automatic lights came on. The interior was all wood paneling, rich red cedar, and enough room for a tennis court. An angry barking came out from the darkness as they steered inside. A wolfhound stood on the deck of a little powerboat, its paws on the rail. The pontoon boat snugged up in the space next to the powerboat. Amos hauled himself up, and the wolfhound darted toward him, growling and snarling. It was a beautiful animal. Genetically engineered, he figured, for the gloss of its fur and the graceful lines of its face. "Hey there," Amos said, squatting down to its level. "Someone didn't bother taking you along when they left, huh? That shit's gotta suck." The dog shied back, uncertain and frightened. "How about this?" Amos said. "Don't start anything with us. We won't shoot you." It doesn't talk, Eric said as the dog retreated, barking over its shoulder. How do you know? Assholes with this much money, maybe they put some kind of translator into its brain. They can't do that, Eric said, then turned to Peaches. They can't, can they? This is the Cook estate, Peaches said. Darwa and Cooney lived here. I used to sleep over on Wednesday nights in the summer. She shuddered a little, and Amos cocked his head. It's a long time since I've been here. It seems like it should have changed more. You know how to get to their hangar? Eric asked. I do. But when they got there, the space was empty. When they crossed the broad gravel yard to the next hangar over, the Davidoviches, it was empty too. The third one didn't have a ship, but it did have a dozen people. They stood in the center of the space with handguns and the kind of cheap suppression sprays they sold over the counter at grocery stores. The man in front was maybe 50, with graying hair and the beginnings of a new beard. You all of you stay back, the man yelled as Amos and Butch and three more came in through the side door. This is private property. Oh, it belongs to you? Butch sneered. This all your place? We work for the Quartermans. We have a right to be here. The man waggled his handgun. You, all of you, get out! Amos shrugged. Another half dozen of Eric's people had come in, most of them with assault rifles held calmly at their sides. The servants were all huddled together in the middle of the room. If they'd had any skill or practice, there would have been two or three snipers up in the rafters, ready to start picking the bad guys off while these folks kept their attention low. But Amos didn't see anyone. I kind of don't think the Quartermans are coming back. We're going to take some of their stuff. But anything we can't use, you should feel welcome to. The man's face hardened, and Amos got ready for there to be a lot of dead people. But before Eric's people lifted their guns, Peaches interrupted. You're Stokes, right? The front man, Stokes apparently, lowered the gun, confused as Peaches stepped forward. It's me, Clarissa Mao. Miss Clarissa? Stokes blinked. The gun wavered. He heard Butch mutter, "Fucking seriously?" under her breath, but no one started firing. Miss Clarissa, what are you doing here? Trying to leave, Peaches said with a laugh in her voice. What are you here for? Stokes smiled at her, and then nervously at Amos and Eric and all the others, shining his teeth at them like the beam from a deeply insecure lighthouse. The evacuation order came when the second rock came down. The Quartermans all left, took the ship and gone. They all went. The Cooks, the Faulkners, Old Man Landborn. Everyone. They took their ships and left. Told us the security would keep us safe until relief came. But there's no relief. And the security? They're thugs. They tell us we have to pay them since the Quartermans are gone, but what do we have? All the Quarterman shit, Amos said. Which brings me back to my first point. Are there any ships? Peaches said. We need a ship. Just to get us to Luna. That's why we came here? Yes. Yes, of course. The Begavins left the Zhangguo. It is in their hangar. We can take you there, Miss Clarissa, but... A sharp whistle came from the side door, from the street outside it. Butch met Amos's gaze. Company, she said. The streets on the island were wide, roomy, big enough to haul a ship down to the bridge. The security patrol car had the claw and eye logo of Pinkwater. Its headlights cut a wide cone through the darkness. Eric stood with his good hand up to shield his eyes. Two men were swaggering up toward him. Well now, the first man said, what have we got here? Eric backed away, limping. No trouble, sir, he said. How about if I determine that? The lead man said. Get on the fucking ground. He had a cowboy hat on and his hand on the butt of his pistol. Amos smiled. The warmth in his belly and his arms was the same kind he got when he heard a familiar song after a long time. It was just pleasant. I said, get on the ground, you crippled son of a bitch. You do it now or I'll fuck your fucking eye holes. Peaches? Amos called as he strode out into the light. The two security men drew their pistols and pointed them at him. Hey, Peaches, you back there? Yes? She said. It sounded like she was in the side door. That was fine. He saw the pair of security men clock the rest of Eric's people in the gloom. They were mostly silhouetted, but their bodies went tense. always a bad moment, seeing you brought a knife to a gunfight. See, this is what I was talking about, Amos called. Things start falling apart and the tribes get small. These guys probably good upstanding folks when there's a boss to answer to, clients, shareholders. He turned to the man in the hat and grinned amiably. Hey, he said. Hey, Hat said. Amos nodded and called back toward the hangar. Thing is, you take that away. They're guys with guns. They act like guys with guns. Do guys with guns stuff, right?
I follow you, Peaches said.
You should put your guns down, Amos said to Hat. We've got just a shitload more of them than you do. So really? You heard the man, Butch said. Guns on the ground, please. The security men glanced at each other. We could have just shot you, Amos said. As Hat and his partner slowly lowered their guns to the pavement, Amos raised his voice again. So, Peaches, these guys, they go from being protectors of this big tribe with what's his name and them inside the tribe to being protectors of their own little tribe and those folks on the outside of it. It's all about who's in and who's out. Hat lifted his hands, palms out, about shoulder high. Amos hit him in the jaw. It was a solid punch, and his knuckles ached from it. Hat staggered back, and Amos stepped forward, twisting his body into the kick. It landed on Hat's left kneecap, and the man screamed. Thing is, Amos called, most of us don't got room in our lives for more than six. He straight-kicked Hat in the middle of the back as he tried to stand up. Maybe seven people. You get bigger than that, you gotta start telling stories about it. Hat was crawling back toward the car. Amos put his knee on the man's back, leaned down, and started emptying Hat's pockets and belt. Chemical mace, a taser, a wallet with ID cards, a two-way radio. He found the unregistered drop gun strapped to the guy's ankle. Each thing he took, he threw out to the edge of the water, listening for the splash. Hat was weeping, and Amos's weight made it hard for him to breathe. The other one was standing perfectly still. Like, if he didn't move, Amos wouldn't notice him. Wasn't like he had a better strategy at this point. Amos grinned at him. Hey! The guy didn't say anything. It's okay, Amos said. You didn't say you were gonna skull fuck my friends, right?
Right,
the other one said. Okay then, Amos stood up. You should probably get him to a doctor. And then whoever else you've got on this shithole of an island, tell them what I did, and how I didn't fuck you up because you hadn't fucked with me. Okay? All right. Great. And then don't come back around here.
I won't.
We won't, Amos said. You mean we won't. Not you and not your tribe.
We won't.
Perfect. No problems then. And give Butch your stuff, all right? Drop gun too.
Yes, sir.
Amos walked back toward the hangar. Sure enough, Peaches was standing in the doorway, her arms crossed. He wiped his hand. His knuckles were bleeding. See, that's what civilization is, he said. Bunch of stories. That's all.
So, what if it is? Peaches said.
We're really good at telling stories.
Everything just turned to shit, and we're already finding ways to put it back together. Stokes and the other servants were ready to fight us or get killed, but then I knew his name, and he remembered me. And now there's a story where he wants to help us. You go out there and you send a message about how those guys should leave us alone, all of us, more than just six or seven. And, side note here, you know the Pinkwater guys are going to come back and try to kill you for that, right?
Just need him to take a long time gearing up, Amos said. Figure we'll be off the ground by then.
Stokes leaned in from behind Peaches, his expression apologetic.
About that, there is a small problem.
The hangar was tall as a cathedral, and the Zhang Guo stood in the middle of it, like a piece of gargantuan art. The surface of the ship was worked to look like gold and silver filigree over a body of lapis. The drive cones had golden ideograms written on them in something that looked like gold, but apparently didn't melt at high temperature. He could tell from looking it didn't have an Epstein drive. Twice as big as the Rosinante, and maybe a quarter as functional. It was as much an orbital shuttle as it was a confession of decadence. And, more to the point, it didn't run. "The house power supplies are exhausted," Stokes explained. "Without power, there's no water recyclers, no heat, no network connections." "So," Amos said, "you figured the smart move was to get a bunch of people who've never seen a working fusion drive to just fire one up so you could top off the batteries? That's the kind of suicidal optimism you just don't see every day." Stokes shrugged. "The ship was here only because it needed repair. We were never able to make it run." Amos clapped the man on the shoulder. "You just go get me all the tools you were using. This is something I know how to do." Stokes trotted away, shouting to the others from his group. Eric's people seemed to be equally divided between setting up a defensive perimeter and looking for the most expensive things that would fit in their pockets. Eric and Peaches came to stand beside him. "How fucked are we?" Eric said. "Don't know," Amos said. "First guess, there's something hinky with the power supply. Too much noise. A bad coupler. Something that's triggering the safety shutdown. But I've got to get between her hulls and take a peek." "I'll help you ring the circuits," Peaches said. Eric looked over at her, confused. "I spent a few months as an electrochemical technician," she said. "Well, of fucking course you did," Eric said. "You bring a deck?" Amos asked. "Sure," Eric said. "Why?" Amos pointed at the drive cone with his chin. "You can get the diagnostics running, and I can tell you what the output means." Eric frowned and scratched his neck thoughtfully with his tiny arm. "Sure. Figure I can do that?" Peaches coughed once, then chuckled. "Eric, did you ever, you know, kill anyone?" "I run a drug empire in Baltimore," Eric said. "Of course I've killed someone. Why?" "Nothing," she said. "It's just, here we are, three murderers, and what's going to save our asses, if anything does, is that we happen to have the skill set to repair a fusion drive." Eric smiled. "We are kind of well-suited to this, aren't we?" "Well, we'd better set up some lookouts while we do it, though," Amos said. "My plan to get out of here before trouble came back may not work out." "I can have Stokes help with that, too," Peaches said. "They can't fight, but they can watch. And I can get a few of the savvy ones to help us put the ship together if you want."
"More the merrier," Amos said. "Long as they don't touch anything unless we tell them."
"When we go, are we taking them with us?" Peaches asked.
"Yep," Amos said. She smirked.
"Because they're tribe?"
"Shit no.
My tribe is the crew on the Rossi. Maybe you too. And a dead woman. I don't actually give a shit if every damned one of them dies."
"So why take them?"
One of Eric's people called out. Another one laughed, and one of the servants tentatively joined in. Amos rubbed the raw spots on his knuckles and shrugged.
"Seems like the sort of thing Holden'd do."